Welcome to CFO Radio. I am Lorraine Chilvers. This is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO, and we examine the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives for today. We'd like to thank our sponsors. Lee Cantor, could you introduce them for us?
Absolutely. Today's show is brought to you by Delaney Consulting LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, project-based consulting, and permanent placement. Visit our website, DelaneyLLC.com. And also, SAP Business by Design, an integrated on-demand solution that helps small to medium-sized businesses run their entire business with no software or hardware to buy, install, maintain, or upgrade. That way you can focus on what is important, your business, not your software. Visit SAP.com for more information.
Well, today we're with Duane Samples to discuss the role of the CFO, specifically as it relates to elements of the business, growing it, and making sure that we manage it well. Welcome to the show, Duane.
Thank you.
You've served in some senior roles, Duane, as CFO of Sunbelt Services, and previously you had a CPA practice, private practice. Duane, tell us a little bit about your background and why you chose the path to being CFO.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I started my career in college at Georgia Tech, was going to be an engineer, and just decided that that wasn't for me, so I decided to go into accounting and went the public route, worked for mostly local companies here in Atlanta, and started my own firm back in the late 80s and early 90s. And then a big client of mine, Sunbelt Services, kept persuading me, I guess, to leave my practice and come to work for them as CFO. So at the time, during my career as a CPA, kind of was, you know, kind of waning a little bit and a little bit of burnout. And so I chose, after doing my own practice for about 5 years, to go ahead and make the jump and get out of public accounting and go to work for a client. And that's how I got to be a CFO.
So on the CPA side, were you on the tax side? Were you on audit and advisory, or were you consulting?
Yeah, my practice mostly was consulting and tax. I had a partner who was audit related, but I spent most of my time in tax planning and consulting for medium to small businesses.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, and today you have a slightly different role. You have your own company. Tell us a little bit about that.
After the role at Sunbelt kind of wound down, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later, I am now doing what I did for Sunbelt for other companies. So kind of the world is changing, and a lot of folks are doing, you know, their specialty for many different entities today. And so I found, rather than doing one specific role for one company, that maybe I would try to do what I can do for a lot of companies. And so that's kind of what I'm doing, and it's going well, and I'm really enjoying it.
That's excellent. And mm-hmm. Clearly you've had some growth from our previous discussions.
Absolutely.
Well, Duane, one of the elements of that small business is the size of the business. How do you grow? The Small Business Administration details that 99% of employers are businesses with less than 500 employees, a staggering amount mm-hmm. there. When I first read that, I thought that I was misreading something. Now, you've come from this small business background. What are the key challenges for the smaller business today?
Yeah, I think especially in the last 2 years, I think it's been one of just survival in some respects. I mean, it's, you know, the economy has been such that it's been very difficult on the small business owner to deal with the challenges that come with a slower economy. You know, cash flow becomes a keen issue when you provide a product or service and then have issues in collecting from your customers. It's kind of a trickle effect. And so to me, that's one thing. And then I think another thing is how you do less with more. You know, how do you make your operation efficient? How do you accomplish your goals and your tasks with less resources and less people? And then I think the final thing I would say is just the differentiation piece. You know, it's so hard to be unique in the marketplace today. You know, it seemed like there's one of everybody and then 10 of everybody. And, you know, I was reminded of it. Well, I just recently, I have a daughter who just turned 16, and she got an automobile of a particular brand. And you know how that goes is, you know, once you get one, then everybody has one all of a sudden. I think it's that way in small business. You know, what is your differentiation point? How are you making yourself more agile, more flexible, more appropriate in the economy and in the environment that we're in today? Or, you know, or are you not? And unfortunately, I think if you're not, then you're on a short short lifespan.
Mm. And how does that impact the role of the CFO and that financial function? Is there a trickle down?
Oh, definitely. In a smaller environment, typically in a Fortune 1000 or 500 company, you would have different people performing the roles that usually a CFO will be in charge of in a smaller entity. So you have to learn, the most important thing I could say in a smaller environment is to learn what you know and then learn what you don't know. And then be eager and enthusiastic about getting help in the areas that you're probably responsible for, but you may not be an expert in. So in that small environment, I think the CFO has been challenged to broaden their thinking, broaden their methodology of thinking, and being able to do more than just the pure financial aspects of a business.
Now, you mentioned know what you know and then go figure out what you don't know. Mm-hmm. Is it more important for the small business to go get those advisors and to have those people on staff, or perhaps not on staff, but on call, that outsourcing on an hourly, weekly, monthly basis?
Yeah, in my situation at Sunbelt, I found that was absolutely the case. We had, at our largest time, we had over 1,000 employees. And so, employee relation issues, employee discrimination issues, workman's comp questions, those type of things were just come up all the time. And in the role of CFO, you're not necessarily an expert in that, nor do you have maybe a director of human resources that's an expert in that. So I found a way to supplement was to use, the best of the best advisors on an as-needed basis, and go to them often without, and not really be worried about the cost, because you got what you needed when you needed it and you've solved the problem and you can move on. So So I think it's absolutely critical to see, where can you outsource? Where can you utilize the skills of experts, but only utilize them when you need them?
Now, today you're serving in the capacity of CEO. Are those things a little bit frightening for the CEO? I mean, you're talking about go get people with the expertise. You know what? Expertise isn't cheap. You're talking about spending money. You're talking maybe about forecasting for spending that ad hoc money.
It's different from the CFO's perspective. However, I think that's a big part of the role of the CFO is that education piece. In a smaller environment, a lot of times the CEO is the entrepreneur. He's the starter. This is his baby. He's grown it from, nothing to whatever it's become. And so you have to be able to relate to that, on the one side, but yet, you got to tell him what he needs to hear or her, not what they want to hear, So your role is to manage his expectation or her expectation and be sure they understand when those expenditures are necessary, because the risk of not spending the money can be much worse than, it's like your car. You either maintain it now or pay for it in the future.
Now, you also mentioned that the small business CFO doesn't have that director of human resources. Probably they don't have that director of IT. They probably don't have a lot of other underlings, if you will, to mm-hmm. be able to do a lot of the management expertise. Is the CFO in that capacity a very broad generalist? Does he or she wear multiple hats? Would they be doing the hiring? Would they be doing the tax work? Would they be doing the other aspects of technology and such?
Yeah. In my role, and I think in most roles in a smaller company, if not doing those, you are overseeing those with a level of expertise that's not at the level you would want it to be. So in my case, I was almost CFO, COO, CIO, CLO, see any letters you want to name. And so the key to that, though, is to know what your objectives are, to know what you're trying to accomplish, and then budget and control the ways to get that done, and not, trust your advisors. I mean, I had very, very good outsource advisors that were just really close business partners, and as long as we understood where each other's strengths were, it worked very well. But yeah, I wore a lot of hats. I joke with people, that's why I look like I do. It's a lot of miles on these old bones. So.
Now, in that regard, you talked about cash, you talked about sales and the credit crunch for that small business with cash flow. Is one of your advisors your bank?
Absolutely, especially in the role of a small business. I think one of the CFO's key critical roles is to develop and maintain a relationship with your banking partners. In this economy, those people that have the relationships, have a chance, it maybe is not much of a chance, but have a chance at getting, you know, some leniency or getting things done, that if you just are a number to those folks, that there's no chance. So I always cultivated very, very highly on my priority list my relationship with the bank. I told them the good news, the bad news, and the ugly news all the time, so there's no surprises. I think one of the mistakes you can make in this role is not telling the bank what you think they don't want to hear. So, but the reality is the reality. So if you don't keep them informed, you know, having a surprise is a lot worse than having bad news. So I always tried to avoid any surprises when it came to my bankers.
Sure, sure. And as you grew that business with Sunbelt from 10 employees to 1,000, how did you, as CFO managing technology, managing human resources and the finance and accounting function, mm-hmm. how do you bring people on to help grow? One of the key elements of that is when to know to hire that new management team. How do you judge that?
Judge is the correct word. I'm not sure there's a completely 100% right answer or 100% wrong answer. In our case, with our people counts, they were all remote. So we did not have a location where all these people were. And so it was important early on, and part of the thing that I did immediately when I got there was to build an infrastructure that could support a remote workforce and to be to have the foundation such that it was very scalable, you know, at a pretty quick pace. So the good news is when we went through our growth spurts, we had laid a good foundation so that we could handle the increase versus having to build the building and put people in it all at the same time. So I think a lot of times, you're reluctant to build the processes and systems early enough because it does cost money. But I think it's very critical as you grow and as you want to get on a growth curve, that sometimes your infrastructure can be the holdback. You know, you just can't handle it, and therefore you don't do it well.
Sure, absolutely. And you mentioned that remote workforce. Mm-hmm. Describe a little bit about Sunbelt. You're in the retail industry. Who were your customers? What was it that you did?
We were in a space that's kind of referred to as merchandising services. What we did is provided people resources to large big box retailers. In our case, it was for home improvement retailers to go into their stores and perform functions that normally the average customer would think is done by an employee, but you'd be amazed what's outsourced in those environments. And so we had people, and they had a number of stores, 3-5 stores, and they would go just around those stores and accomplish tasks. The problem or the issue that brings up is, how do you pay expenses for those people? How do you know what they're doing? How do you verify what they were doing? And so we utilized a lot of technology tools to be sure that we were getting, that we expected what we expected, but that we actually got execution around what we wanted to get done. So technology was a big part of what we did there. Managing a remote force is a challenge that if you've never been through, you know, it's hard to even know what you don't know. I mean, it's a very, very interesting environment.
Is fraud, theft, people not working when they say they are working, is that all a complex piece?
Yeah, a complex piece of it. And the way, what we did is we used some systems of data mining, so we would compare and contrast all kind of different things. Our individuals carried handheld devices that recorded their daily activities, and so we had all kind of tricks and tips and tools. I won't mention them because there are still people out there probably doing them today, but to be sure that everything matched, you know, so we could tell if a person said they were at a location but they weren't at a location, we could tell that. And there's a lot of tools out there. I think the thing there is, if you don't want to cure the problem, you know, with overkill. I mean, a lot of times when you talk about technology, you know, you everybody wants to sell you the machine that will, you know, launch the space shuttle, and what you really need is something to just keep up with the time, you know. And so knowing the balance between yeah, but what if, and this will work and this will accomplish our function, I think is key in the budgetary process and the investment process.
So as a CFO, how do you learn about those companies that are out there? How do you learn about those technologies? Because to your point, technology is changing. The world is changing. Now you can track where a person is. Whether they think that you are tracking them or not, I guess, is of no consequence until you have that dialogue with the employee. How do you learn about all these different things?
You read a lot. You know, I think reading, you pay attention to the trade mags and your industry and your niche, you know, as to what people are doing. And then I always, you know, my philosophy was that I didn't have an ego as far as needing to be the guy who figured all this out. You know, I wanted to find out what somebody else had already figured out and then apply it to my situation. So anytime you start at zero and develop a system, and we did some of that, it always turned out to be more expensive than we could have done it otherwise, probably, and it was a lot more painful in the process. So I just think you pay attention to the industry leaders and you try to adapt and use what they're doing before you. You know, I think creating it yourself should be always the last, you know, if there's nothing else, then okay, that's the last option. But I think you should exhaust everything prior to doing that, because you just wind up, you know, making all the mistakes somebody else could have made for you.
Sure. And in relation to the financial systems, whether it's gathering the order, whether it's paying the customer, whether it's paying your employees, the CIO role clearly is a role in the small business that the CFO owns. Yeah. How do you choose a system? How do you enable the employees to use the system?
Yeah, in our case, luckily, or you know, for some reason, we kind of had chosen that early on and built, again, like I said before, that infrastructure around expandability and scalability. It was very interesting in the financial reporting world. We looked at every employee as a profit center. So our financial reporting was down to the employee level. So we started at salary, expenses, cell phone, travel of an employee, and then rolled up from there to the bigger picture. So it was a fairly sophisticated, complex system, but the only controllables that we had were the things that were happening at the employee level, because that was our business. So it was necessary. It was no fun, especially for the field. It's, you know, hard to explain, well, why do I have to go to this level of detail? So we always tried to show them the result of what we were asking them to do, as opposed to just say, you know, do it, damn it. You know, that works in some cases, but it doesn't work in other cases. So,
sure. And what size of employees were you at the point at which you decided that you needed to go to the profit center level that
We were at about 250 employees when we did that. We did some, when I came on board, it was kind of one big P&L, you know, and so it was hard to manage. And so what we did is we regionalized first, and then we took it down to the employee level second, and then we could budget that way, and then we had, you know, measures to compare to. There's an old saying that runs around probably all businesses, but we heard it from Home Depot all the time, and that was, you know, what gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed improves, you know. And so we always said we got to know down to, you know, John Smith, how he's doing compared to Billy's Johnson, so that we can manage that difference and manage, you know, why is he better, why is he worse. And it just almost was a have to, but it really made the infrastructure complex, you know, to get to that level of detail.
And how long did that kind of an implementation and change of process take?
Probably over, with a small company like we were, we probably spent about a year, you know, going from the old to the new, and then learning about the tools and the things that we could add to the system to make it, more efficient and effective. So I would say probably about a year.
That's a lot of time. That's a lot of time away from the business, training people and educating.
It really is. And you know, part of that time was, you know, kind of the, quote, back office time, you know, where you were testing and running parallel and doing things like that. But then, you know, because the worst thing you can do in a small business environment, first off, generally the employees are not going to like change anyway. And so when you change and then change again, you know, so we had to try to be sure that once we rolled it out to the masses, that it was going to be what we needed to do.
Well, that being said, the CFO of a smaller company, how different of that of a role is it to that Fortune 1000 company? You're still closing the books. You're still preparing the financials. You still hopefully got your eye on the cash flow, but you know what? Then there's the P&L and the balance sheet. You're still looking at the various chart of accounts line items. Is it that different?
It's probably not that different. It probably is at a more detailed level. I think in a bigger company, if you think about it, maybe kind of as a dashboard kind of a process. At the CFO level, you're looking at the key indicators, the key metrics, the key operational measurements that you can run the business from, and somebody else is kind of crunching the numbers. You know, in a smaller environment, you probably jump down to a lower level of detail. It'd be nice to just get the answer, you know, but you probably have to jump down lower and figure out the answer to the question more than just look at the answer and make a decision on it. So I would think that's the role. You're in a lower detail level than you are in a bigger company.
So in that situation where the CEO is hiring a new CFO, is that CFO for the smaller company, are there particular characteristics that he or she would have?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good, very, very good question. You know, because of the many hats you wear, I think you have to be careful. If I'm evaluating that role for a smaller entity, I want to have it's more important to me that a person is rounded than they are an expert at you know, LIFO inventory for a widget company. And a lot of times, especially if you try to bridge the gap, if you try to take a person out of, maybe you take the controller from a Fortune 500 company and want to make them CFO of a smaller company, I think it's critical that you understand the way they think and the experience they've had, because, you know, it's going to be a very different experience. And if they're an expert at a thing, but not have a generalist mindset, it can be a real limitation because there's just so much more to do. So I think that's a very good question.
And that being said, we have the CFO tends to be box-based. Mm-hmm. We live in a world of accounting standards and GAAP and rules and closes with dates and hard cutoffs. Mm-hmm. The CEO of that smaller company, you've said yourself, is typically more entrepreneurial. Today we're going to head north. Tomorrow, you know what, move west. And the team's got to follow. Mm-hmm. How does that clash come about in a very positive manner? Because clearly for a working organization, it's got to be positive.
Yeah, I think in our organization, what we tried to do is, you know, when we were making those strategic decisions and we were reacting to what the CEO at that time was telling us, you know, it was anything goes in the room. You know, we would get it all hashed out, get it all done. But then, you know, when you leave, you're lock, stop, and going down that direction, and you just have to suck it up if you don't agree, or if it's going to require you to, you know, have to work in your particular area for a lot of time. But it's, you know, that communication is huge. There's a new book, or I don't know, it's new now. It's his one back, but a guy named Daniel Pink, I don't know if you're familiar with him, wrote a book called A Whole New Mind. And he describes in there how the MBA of the past is going to have to change to deal with the world that's coming. It won't all be about just analysis and theory and crunching the numbers. You got to be able to be both right-brained and left-brained to fill this role in the future, because it's going to require so many more soft skills to go along with the detailed skills that you have in the role.
Funny you should mention that. Even Harvard Business School of the yesteryear would have had the economic brilliant minds, the financial whizzes. Today they actually have rap artists and mm-hmm. so forth, people that have made an awful lot of money in a very different environment. So that change in culture is even taking place in the yeah. foundation of our education.
And if you look in the, you know, in the area I used to be in, the area of the CPA world or even in the IT world, you know, so much of the detail coding work and the analysis work can be done offshore, you know, at a much cheaper price. So you can get the data crunched. What does it mean? You know, and I think, you know, I read something yesterday that, you know, data is exploding. We all know that. But even like between last year and this year, it's like 40% increase in the amount of data out there. So as a CFO, what's important? You know, you can get into analysis paralysis. You know, you can analyze anything. You know, at some point you got to make a decision. And I think one of the things that we found, at least, that you know, especially in times of uncertainty, that the lack of information and the lack of direction is worse than bad, you know, communicating the wrong things. And the way I put that is, they'll forgive me for being wrong. They won't forgive me for not communicating. And so I think communication and keeping people abreast will help as you go through these waters of the economy that we're in, will help people be more loyal to you. You know, they want to know where they stand. And I think that's part of your role, is to be sure that CEO is on board with that and that you're providing him the information that he needs to communicate that stuff.
Interesting that you should mention that, the role of managing up as well as managing down.
Yeah.
Sometimes people describe the C-level as being a very lonely position at the top, but the CFO essentially has tentacles in all of the different aspects of the business.
That's exactly
they manage
right.
down and they manage up, huh?
That's exactly right. And I think the, you know, talking about the C-level, I think that's flattening out, you know, every day. I think that organizations who are still very hierarchical in management style, especially in the small business world, I think are the ones that are going to have trouble in the future, because this new crowd of workers that are coming up, you know, the 20 and 30 somethings, they don't get that hierarchical deal. You know, that's not who they are. And so the challenge is, how do you retrain, you know, me and people of my age to understand that? You know, I grew up in the age of the baby boomers, and, you know, you came to work at 8 and you went home at 5 and you took, you know, 30 minutes for lunch, and, you know, now you work in the middle of the night. You know, who knows? But so becoming more of a let's get the job done than a rigid, structured, you know, organization, I think, is going to be important. And I think that squelches innovation, differentiation. You know, you got to have people whose ideas are free to roam, you know, in your culture, to be able to survive this world we're in now, I think.
Very interesting. And obviously in that smaller environment, we've talked about bringing in the expert. You've talked a little bit about outsourcing. What kind of functions can a CFO outsource?
We outsourced IT. We had an IT partner that fulfilled the role of CIO for us.
So that's what, network maintenance? Is it purchasing the laptops?
Purchasing the laptops, doing the forecasting for replacement. That whole role, we had that outsourced. Keeping up with the inventory tags and that whole deal. Another place I think you can accomplish some of it is within your HR functions. There are some things within HR, especially with HIPAA regulations the way they are, and, you know, what you know and what you don't know and what you want to take responsibility for. I think there's some outsourcing opportunities there.
Would you outsource the recruiting function? Would you outsource the benefits management function?
Benefits management we outsourced. We did not outsource recruiting primarily in this circumstance because the footprint that we had, we were in 40 states. So finding an outsourced a recruiting partner that could accomplish all that was difficult, but I think it is something you should consider. I mean, why do I need to read 150 resumes when I can describe what I want, and then you give me the top 10, you know, and let me make my decision? So I think that's a good area also that could be, you know, and now even in the IT area with the cloud computing and with all that, maybe I don't even need the lights and bells in my office anymore. So it's fascinating the way the world's changing.
One could argue, do we even need to have the office in-house, or do we outsource that? I guess the first step was to lease the building. The modern day, as you said, work at midnight. Well, those people working at midnight probably work from home, huh?
Absolutely. And I think you got to embrace that technology and embrace the ways you can make the culture work in that remote environment. Because I think in a small business, you can't discount the value of culture. I mean, that your culture will determine how loyal your people are, how successful they are, how much of their heart, soul, and ideas they give to you, you know. So how do you make that work in a, you know, I say now, you know, the question of whether I need an office or not is going to depend on how close the nearest Starbucks is. You know, as long as I have a Starbucks within 5 miles, maybe I don't need an office anymore. It's an interesting thing to contemplate.
The virtual world.
Yeah. Voice over IP, Skype. I mean, some of this stuff, you know, I'm glad I still have a younger teenager because I can keep up with all this craziness through her skills, you know.
Do you ever see the time where the CFO will contract somebody via text?
Probably so. Absolutely. In fact, there's tools out there now that that we actually began to use at the end, to where we formed our own little group and had a text, you know, mass text broadcast function. And so, yeah, all kind of cool stuff.
That's very exciting. And obviously the role of the CFO has changed. It's evolved during our lifetimes. It'll probably change some more. As we wrap up, we have a tradition on the show to ask you, what is your tip of the CFO tip of the month? What is yours?
I think from a small business perspective, I think I've already mentioned it, but to me, the best tip you can do is to realize and recognize that I'm good at these things, and I am an expert at these things, and I will keep my skills sharp in that area. But it's not worth your time and your effort and energy to become an expert in other things, and recognizing that and getting assistance, I think, is the key to having work-life balance, having success in what you're trying to do, and in the role of a smaller company. I think that would be my number one tip, is know what you know and know what you don't know.
That's a great tip. Thank you very much. And we'd like to thank Dwayne Samples, our guest today, for sharing his innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. Thank you also to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to small businesses that are growing fast, as well as the Fortune 1000 companies. For more information about Delaney, go to DelaneyLLC.com. And thank you also to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for that small to medium-sized company. For more information, go to sap.com. This and other short thought leadership about today's CFO is available right from your fingertips. Go to www.cforadio.com. Thank you for listening. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.